Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is the man who can't seem to handle his microphone, Mr. Spencer Williams.
I blame gravity.
It's
all my fault.
We got a packed house tonight as we are joined by, of course, the illustrious part-time slash stenographer slash intern slash everything else, coffee bringer who didn't bring coffee tonight and donuts.
Amy. Would have been helpful tonight, actually.
Really?
Spencer
tonight,
needed.
Tonight of all nights?
Of all nights.
No donuts.
We are also joined by another good friend of the show. We have the Jack of All Flights podcast host, Jack, with us today.
We are here. We really are here. Spencer, I'm going to blame it on the tequila. That's why.
I have no idea what you're talking about, sir.
Okay, cha-cha-cha.
We got a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the recently dropped Marvel slash Sony film, Venom, Let There Be Carnage. There's a lot of thoughts, a lot of opinions we got, and Spencer seems to be heading the negative side of it, so I'm interested.
I hate the title. I just hate it. Sorry.
How do you really feel?
He doesn't like a colon.
Well, let us know after we do the opening credits, because Spencer... Opening credits, please.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. At our website, we got over 280 episodes ready for you to listen. We got everything from Marvel films, DC films. We got stuff on Asian cinema. We got stuff on 80s films. We got anything and everything you're looking for. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. If you want to check us out also on your streaming app where you listen to podcasts, we are everywhere over at iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Pandora, and Spotify. Usually it's the other way around. But
yeah, you do.
Usually it's Spotify and Pandora. Either way, it
that's
works.
That's usually how it goes.
And speaking of that's how it goes, yeah, we got a great show because this is a packed house tonight. And I'm anxious to actually hear your guys' perspective on the film because right now it's a very divisive film and creating a lot of different rifts within the Marvel community. But yeah, I'm anxious to hear what you guys think and thoughts and stuff. So, with that awkward segue,
that was very awkward.
Let us jump into our review, our discussion of the sequel, Venom, Let There Be Carnage. This movie came out just this past Friday, I believe. I don't know. It came out. It's been about a couple days, has it?
Yeah, Friday. Yeah. It came out Friday.
This past Friday? Okay. And we each got a chance to see it at different times of this past weekend. And needless to say, every single person here has a very unique perspective on this film. And I'm actually really anxious to hear. You can't see it because this is an audio podcast, but Spencer is like smirking like very...
I disapprove of the synopsis I'm about to read.
Well, you can disapprove all you want. Next time you can write it too if you want.
I'm just saying. it's bad.
Well, why don't you read that official synopsis, goodness, badness?
Eddie Brock struggles to adjust to his new life as the host of the alien symbiote, Venom, which grants him superhuman abilities in order to be a lethal vigilante. As he attempts to reignite his career by interviewing serial killer Cletus Kasady, all hell breaks loose when Kasady becomes the host of the symbiote Carnage and escapes prison after a failed execution. Now Eddie and Venom must fight to save not only the city again, but also the woman he loves.
Yeah. Hey, you know,
I have problems with that.
I know you have problems.
So most of the movie was them arguing about, should I be a vigilante or not?
It's the lethal protector.
Directed by Andy Serkis, the famous Andy Serkis. The film stars Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, Naomi Harris, Reed Scott, Stephen Graham, and Woody Harrelson. Tom Hardy actually received his first story credit for this film, making him the fifth person to receive writing credit for a comic book superhero film that he also starred in after Christopher Reeve in Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Jack's like, hold on, what?
Hold on, let me take another
Poor Christopher Reeve.
He's a blessed man, wonderful actor. We miss you, but woof, Quest for Peace.
Paul Rudd in 2015's Ant-Man. All right. Edward Norton in The Incredible Hulk. And Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool 2.
Fair. Okay.
So, talking about this particular movie. So, obviously, we've all seen the first Venom. The first film.
Begrudgingly, yes. As much as I tried to forget it.
Begrudgingly, yes.
I did forget it.
There we go. Good way to start.
Like, literally, this is what I remember. Eddie gets Venom, and then turd in the wind, and that's all I remember from that movie.
So pretty much just the trailer.
I don't remember that.
Turd in the wind.
It's literally just the trailer right there, what he did. It's the 30-second TV spot.
Yeah.
The movie came out a while back, and mind you, it wasn't exactly Sony's like blockbuster film. It did have the unique crowds that it did bring in for people who are huge Venom fans, both good and bad, would you say, Amy?
Yes, and this is coming from the comic book. I adjust my glasses person because I am not a Venom fan. Like, yes, I support comic book creators and comic book movies, but woof. As
Wolf about the
no, as the Macaulay character? Culkin in Home Alone had stated when he saw Buzz's girlfriend, woof.
By the way, I don't know if you know this, but that was actually a photo of one of the production assistant's sons dressed up as a girl.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Little
That's
things.
Amazing. I did not know that. Anyway, we reviewed this movie in episode 134.
The first one?
Yeah, the first one. And it was not reviewed well, to my memory.
Oh, I believe we didn't review it well. Was that just you and I, or was that with Chad?
I think Chad.
Chad.
The first movie was a really hard pill to swallow because it was Sony's opportunity to work with lesser known, and not heavily lesser known, but mildly lesser known characters in the Marvel comic universe to create something that was equally as big as their Spider-Man counterpart, because Sony still, I guess they still own Spider-Man. They just work hand in hand with Disney Marvel.
It is a sticky mess over there, because technically any properties that at that point are of the Spider universe do belong to Sony. So we end up with not Venom is considered one of the top four villains for Spider-Man. And it's a mess.
Yeah. So
it's a hot mess.
It's a hot mess.
It's not even just hot. It's molten mess.
It's a hot black mess.
What?
Hot black mess.
So fast forward to today, and we now have the sequel to that turd in the wind. And
literally.
Needless to say, we've all, like I said, we've all had a chance to see it. And I am declaring it now. This is a spoiler-filled review, so we are talking spoilers.
because
we really can't talk about this movie without kind of hitting on some of the better parts of the film that are spoilers, even though they're a little few.
Better parts? There's one.
For Spencer, there's one. Apparently, there's more for Eddie. We don't even know Jack's take on this yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, so let's go and go around the table. Let's talk about expectations. Like, before going into the movie, what were some of your thoughts? What were some of the things you were looking at? Let's start with Spencer.
This movie's going to suck. That was my first impression.
Wow. Really?
I was going to be like, if they had done well, I would have been very shocked and impressed. Like, honestly. And I would have been like, yeah, they did way better than the first movie. And like tippy toe in the right direction, but then also like they started spinning around in circles. Very odd. Very odd for me.
In terms of
like just overall story and just everything.
So we're talking expectations before we see the film.
Yeah.
So you're talking about just from trailers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like I was like, this movie's not gonna be good.
Amy, what about this? Jack, this is kind of the thing we're used to with Spence. So just so you know.
Yeah, I'm over it.
I like it.
Thank you,
Amy. Expectations.
I'm not gonna lie. It kind of sounded like Spencer's. Hopefully, please don't suck. But oh man, I was dragging my feet to go see this.
Expectations. We're not
that
even
is expectations. Oh, dragging your feet to see it is so, an expectation.
She was talking about watching it.
No. So even getting to that point, I was like, I really don't want to see this. After the first one, I love a good buddy comedy road picture, but this is not my jam. And it didn't even matter that like I'm not a big Venom fan. I got comic book issues about this.
About the character.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Jack, what about you? Coming into the movie, any expectations?
I expected to go on $5 movie night.
Yes.
So I did that. I decided that I was going to hold out a whole 3 days and wait until it was only $5 up the street into a theater that doesn't have security so I could sneak in a double hazy IPA.
There you go.
Because I knew I would have to be at least a little bit buzzed to enjoy this movie.
I should have gone with you, man.
Bro, we would have been federated. The Federation. So I really didn't have any expectation. Because to be honest with you, I don't remember episode one.
There you go. For me, just some of the expectations I had honestly were based around the dynamic between Eddie and Venom. That was it. Because that was the somewhat enjoyable part of the first one. And this was supposed to be a progression of their relationship, so to speak. You know, air quotes, relationship. And the trailers made it seem like that's pretty much what it was going to be. It was going to be a romantic comedy.
Honestly, it is.
It says the man who doesn't like romantic comedies.
Is it your turn?
I'm piggybacking.
So, no. So, honestly, the concern for me was if this movie tried to lean more heavily into comic book territory, because the thing is, it doesn't do regular comic book territory well, unless it's like working hand in hand with Disney. Like with Spider-Man, that's not really its bag. So I was hoping it wasn't going to try overly hard to make something work that wasn't going to. But here we are. And now, okay, you can let the floodgates go, Spence. Let's start with you. First reactions, first impressions as soon as the movie was over.
Okay, first impression, I was like, oh, Spider-Verse, yes. But then for the rest of the movie...
I'm glad we did the spoiler... warning.
Yeah,
before.
Yeah. You already said it. I'm fine. So, like, before, like, speaking of the rest of the movie, I was like, I fundamentally do not understand almost 70% of Woody Harrelson's dialogue in this movie. Because it is just a bunch of nonsense. Like, I get he's supposed to be crazy, but he is too crazy for me to understand. She's a church and a lighthouse or whatever. Like, what? I don't understand that. Like, there's lots of things in this movie that I find confusing. And then the relationship between Eddie and Venom, it is a romantic comedy. Because it's basically like, you know, they're living together, they're trying to make it work, and then they break up, and then they go their separate ways, and then they realize that they're actually a really good fit for each other, and they come back together stronger than ever. Like, I feel like that sounds like a
buddy cop.
No, that sounds like freaking like any romantic comedy. It's so weird.
Amy, first impressions.
Man.
I understand that. I feel that.
So first impressions, it was like a, okay. Like, did I enjoy this? If I like, how does this make me? It was one of those blotch like pictures that like
ink
tell blot. Me how this makes you feel
an ink blot test.
Because there are parts where I was like, oh, yay, and then scrolling through the credits I was like, oh, there's people that I'm really excited about that, you know, yay, you're getting your credits on the film for it. And then I was just like, I don't know how to feel. And then when we get to that post credit sequence, I was like, oh, questions, I have them. But yeah, I'm all over the map on this one. And mostly it was, man, what?
All right, small version, Little John. So.
Okay. Yeah.
What about you, Jack?
Yeah.
First impressions as soon as the movie was over.
First impressions was I didn't remember the first one. I should have brought a second beer.
No.
And, you know, I'm with Lil Amy on this one. Not Lil John, but Lil Amy. I'm with her on this one. Like, I don't really understand a lot of what just happened. Or, like, what's next? I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that overall, like, the whole dynamic between Eddie and... what movie were we talking about again?
The symbiote. You're like, hold on. We got Eddie over here. Eddie over there.
I got this Eddie. I got that Eddie. Eddie and Venom. I think that was the most entertaining you know, part of the entire movie.
Yeah.
And so I kind of went in with that mentality of like, okay, that's what I'm going to enjoy. And that's about all that I got except for a buzz.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Like, I agree. Like, I didn't, I was not impressed pretty much to any matter of the extreme. There was no element of it that really wanted me to come back to see it again. However, I know people who have that type of dynamic in terms of the relationship, like Eddie and Venom. And it's like, that
sounds unhealthy.
Yeah, 100%. I'm like, you guys are toxic. And now there's literally a toxic symbiote in a movie who can show that. You know, this movie, if anything, is more of like a relationship, like It's a Wonderful Life, don't do this because this will happen kind of thing, more so than a Marvel's anti-hero kind of movie.
I did think of my ex-wife at one moment during this movie, but that's for another episode.
I mean, there are a couple of movies we could do that
with. We were talking about toxic relationships.
There you go. Honestly, I felt like this movie had no substance, and I felt let down because I was hoping this was going to be better than the first one. Like, I honestly were. You're making a weird face like you just ate a warhead.
What's on your mind? Were.
Oh, I'm just thinking. I'm just thinking that after, because I had seen it and I had texted this Eddie, not Eddie Brock Eddie, and he was like, "Ah, there were some funny bits in it," and I was like, "What?
Yeah, what?" Because of the fact that it's like there are elements in this movie that if you remove, so it's the same thing that I said in our first episode when we talked about Venom. I said, if you take out in the first film for Venom, in the first one, in our review, I said, if you take out the elements of an alien, like, symbiote attaching itself to people, whatever, this would be, like, if there was no element of Marvel, superheroes, anything, this would be a great movie on the warning signs of mental illness. Like, truly, like, schizophrenia, this would be a great, yeah, because have you not seen the movie? Do you not recall?
No, but now I'm like, oh my gosh, that makes sense.
Like, if you take out the superhero element, you take out Venom out of this, he's literally struggling with thoughts in his head, and he's like, it's driving him nuts. It's like watching, it's a film on the warning telltale signs of, like, schizophrenia. I remember mentioning that in that first episode. Are you okay?
I'm like Mrs. Chen asking about chocolate and talking to, like, the other personality is like, dang.
Yeah. So in this one, I feel like this, taking out the superhero element, taking out, like, the Venom aspect, it's like exactly what we said. This is the progression of, like, how to fix or mend or get out of a toxic relationship. That's what I feel. Because these movies don't ever really have a sense of Marvel to it, no pun intended, but, like, Marvel. And if you were to just dial it back just even a notch, it would probably drop into that framework of, like, oh, this is how to be aware of toxic relationships, or this is how to be aware of friends who may have schizophrenia, or this is how, like, that's what it seems like with these movies. And this was one of those ones that I'm like, okay, if I'm watching this and I didn't know anything about Marvel or superheroes or Venom or Spider-Man, any of that, and I was just watching this, I would feel like this is like a parable for, like, toxic relationships or being a toxic person in a relationship kind of thing. And it's sad, but it's true. It's true. Hey, I gotta make gold out of this giant turd, okay? So this is what
it's a turd in the wind. It just keeps flying
Do you know many turds that fly in the wind? Is that what I'm understanding?
There's a really good line from a TV show about that life is just a poo, like a poo tornado with gold bricks. And all your goal is to catch as many gold bricks as you can and try to stay clean. But that's the only way I can kind of quantify turd in the wind. I'm sorry.
Here's the thing.
It's a long story.
I've heard her say this quote. It involves Benjamin Platt. I've heard her say this quote before. And I had the same reaction you did when she said it. And she,
it stinks, but
it's great. She even tried to explain it to me. And I'm like, that doesn't make it any better. Like, no, there's no such thing as a poo tornado. Like, no.
A poo tornado.
Well, it was Gwyneth Paltrow delivered the line. So,
talking about goop. How life is like a poo tornado, that no matter how much you try to get out of it, in the end, you're still going to get poop on you.
Mm.
Well, that's that says a lot about her life.
Well, her company name is Goop, so...
Like I said.
Okay, moving forward, let's go ahead and talk about acting. And one of the things that I wanted to kind of highlight, obviously Tom Hardy doing his role as Eddie Brock slash also the voice of Venom.
He really was.
He did voice Venom. And a lot of those scenes were, I know it's just him talking playing off himself. Of himself, but if you actually watch the film, he actually took all the recordings that he did as Venom, and then he had them play it back in his ear, in an in-ear. And so while he was doing the lines in scene, he would say his line, and then they would play his Venom line in his ear.
That's cool.
So that way he could react smart. Accordingly, which is very smart, to be honest. It's extremely smart, and I don't know if that was a Tom Hardy thing or an Andy Serkis thing. I don't know whose idea that was. But, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Tom Hardy. I've always liked his works, except for Bane. Everything else I liked, I didn't really enjoy his Bane in The Dark Knight Rises. Was it The Dark Knight Rises?
Yes.
Yeah, you didn't like Bane?
No. Oh, wow. No. Unpopular Warrior. Opinion. No, he was good in Warrior. He was like a New Jersey guy.
But I liked him as Bane, too. Like, I appreciated what he did.
I liked him in Lawless, where he's the bootlegger. He did a Capone film. He was in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, a Guy Ritchie film. I mean, he's done a lot of great stuff.
He's read bedtime stories. He's read bedtime stories to children on BBC or CBB as it's known.
What?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. We'll watch it later.
So seeing him in this role, I enjoyed his moments where he was playing off of Venom. But everything else, I just wasn't a fan of. Like, everything outside of that, if it had to do with, you know, the police, or it had to do with, you know, him and his former girlfriend or anybody else, it just didn't work for me. I don't know. It seemed like the best chemistry for Tom Hardy was to play against himself. Was Tom Hardy. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
I mean, there's no true love like self-love.
Oh, that's one to take away.
That was out of Spencer's Sober Chronicles.
Yeah, anyway. So I think my main problem with this movie is a little bit, like, the Eddie and the Venom parts are the best bits, but also for me, I feel like a lot of the Eddie and Venom parts are a bit too over the top for me, because specifically, there's a portion where Venom starts making Eddie breakfast because he finds out that his ex is
getting married. Oh my gosh, that was a good scene.
But like, I'm like, he's like, cheer up, Eddie, blah, 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 blah. And he's just like making a mess in the kitchen, like singing some song. And I'm like, calm down. Like, calm down, man. Like, you talking nonstop is not going to like drown.
But he doesn't. He doesn't know any better.
He lives in his head. He should know.
How should he know?
He's there.
He knows.
Yeah, he's 24/7. He knows what he's thinking about. Like, I feel like he should have an idea of just like.
What do you think, Jack?
I think that the acting was fresh trash. It was just straight up fresh trash. I'm not going to lie. Except for you know, Venom and Eddie. I think like. I think at the end of this episode, we're all going to come to the conclusion that that dynamic and those scenes were the best scenes of the entire movie.
I agree with that.
And anything else was just, like I said, fresh trash. It seemed forced. It seemed unauthentic.
Yeah.
It just was like, okay, they're trying to fill in the gaps between these scenes between, you know, Venom and Eddie. And those were my favorite parts. And everything else, I just didn't care that much. Amy.
So with acting wise, I will always give props to Miss Michelle Williams, because Heath Ledger's baby mama is still beautiful and brilliant.
Yeah, but she was...
what? I don't even know this.
Wait, what? Serious?
That's Heath Ledger's baby mama?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, I don't think they have a baby together.
Yeah, they do.
Did they?
They have a daughter.
They do? Oh, in real life or in movie life?
In real life.
Oh, man.
Everyone's like, hold up. I didn't notice either.
I mean, she looking good, but she just, you know, she not thick enough for me.
It's okay. So she was in a role where she kind of had already been pigeonholed. She creates this very tiny foil where we don't have a lot of time with her anyway. So I can appreciate the time that she was on screen. And not So then the other thing that Woody Harrelson was just scary, man. Like, I appreciate him, but he was creeping me out.
Scary or confusing?
A bit of both.
he just, I don't know. Woody Harrelson is getting to that.
I had been watching him as Haymitch for the last like month from Hunger Games. So I can't see him as like Cletus Cassidy. And then at the end of one, when they did the like the sneak peek and it was Cletus Cassidy, he looked like the guy in the comic book, which his hair was super curly, giant red, like it was bordering on Ronald McDonald red. It's sketchy. Like
he lived in McDonald land.
He kind of did. But him and the Hamburglar and Mayor McCheese knew what they were doing because it confused and freaked a lot of us out in this
all
movie.
Of them hopped into a car and like started
and
like
the Fry
a slew
kids were
murders.
Like, what?
How did that wig get approved?
Because do you know what? In the first one, it got approved. In the second one, they went, do you know what? No. But when it comes to our main characters, Tom Hardy and Tom Hardy, I liked creepy goop-ish Tom Hardy better than regular Tom Hardy. It was just, it's hard. Like, he's acting with himself. He's his own best foil and his own worst enemy at the same time. And whoever the dude was that was Senor P. Mulligan, the detective, I hated him. I hated him with passion.
He seemed just really pointless.
He did.
He was absolutely pointless.
Well, he ends up being another symbiote later on.
So in the comic books, he's got a role where he takes on the mantle of a symbiote called Toxin. But that's nowhere like mentioned in any of this.
Nope.
Nor is it like hinted at.
It's not even the original comic book, like the line that they're using, which they make the joke at in this.
This movie does the same exact thing that the Incredible Hulk did with what's his name, where he gets Bruce's like blood in his brain and his head starts expanding Edward Norton.
Oh yeah, it was because I thought that was that. I thought that for a minute I thought you were talking about Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern, where his head gets really big and sketchy.
No, I'm talking about
Marvel movies.
It was a Marvel movie.
Green Lantern's a DC.
It's gonna be soon. We don't talk about it anymore.
Your nerd credibility is going down there, Chief. Okay, maybe you should put this down. We rely on you for this stuff.
No, you don't.
Yeah, we do.
No, you don't. I can tell you the first appearance of the black suit Spider-Man, which is technically where the symbiote originally presented
in 252.
That's a famous
DC character we know.
Yeah, it's Secret Wars number 8. It's the Amazing Spider-Man 252 with the first appearance of Venom and his full self was number 300.
Are you done?
Yep.
Okay.
That's cool.
Oh my gosh. Michelle Williams is hot trash in this movie. She has no purpose at all. I don't feel like she even is needed. Her whole role in this film is just to be the damsel in distress, and that even was garbage.
They needed Dr. Dan.
They didn't even need Dr. Dan. Like, her whole role, even she was probably one of the more cringiest parts of this movie, even more cringy than Cletus Cassidy, with that whole her coming on to Venom when he's in Mrs. Chan's body. Like, that was gross.
And Mrs. Chen and that CG work on Mrs.
Yeah, Mrs. Chen.
Oh, those eyes.
Like, I couldn't tell what she was doing. It was like Rorschach's face or something.
It was Rorschach's mask squished into her actual physical face. It was hard to watch. Horrible.
Yeah, like, I felt like she was just there to incite, like, the emotional upheaval for Eddie, which led to that whole scene, the silly scene where Venom's making breakfast and singing and getting the mail and everything.
That was prior to that.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Her whole role was just to create that scene to make them have him make food for him because he's depressed.
Hmm.
That was the only thing Michelle Williams actually did productively in this movie, personally. RIP Heath Ledger, but still, your wife needs to just not do that anymore.
Not do this movie anymore, because I loved her in Fosse Verdon, but that's a different story because you didn't watch that.
No. Anyway, any other performances that you guys thought were good / not good / they needed to be shot on sight?
Good, but
no to good.
Honestly, the problem with this movie is that you could delete a lot of characters, mm-hmm. and it's still the same movie.
Mrs. Chen could go. Dr. Dan could go.
How many characters are there in this movie? There's not many.
Actually, that's...
There's less than which is, two full hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, now that you mentioned it, there's almost nobody.
The chickens are two.
It feels like this movie has so much going on, but there's not really. It's just each person is moving at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it's like you're watching this movie and it's like Michelle Williams is doing all this and she gets all this and that. And then Shriek is over here and she's doing all this and she's blah, blah, blah. And then Cletus Cassidy is just on an island all to himself.
I was counting. Does Venom and Eddie Brock count as one character or two? Because right now without the chickens, I'm at seven, not including Sonny and Cher the chickens.
They're not in this movie. They're literally just there. But they're not important enough. They are mentioned once.
At the middle and at the end.
Yeah.
And at the end.
But they're not like vital pieces to this movie.
They are for Venom.
Very true.
No, Spencer, don't encourage her, please. This movie feels like there's all these different things going on. Mm-hmm. But in actuality, this movie is literally running in place at 100 miles an hour.
There's nothing going on.
That's absolutely nothing. Quotes right there. Running in place at 100 miles per hour.
That's correct.
Accurate.
And I think there's a big thing to say, like in terms of the expectations that we've come to expect with Marvel Disney films and then Marvel other films or even anyone else. Like Marvel Disney seems to have this scope of this bar that is set when it comes to creating films that have some type of engagement, some form of engagement, something that keeps you invested in the main character or main characters till the end of the film. Hmm. Would you guys say that's in agreement?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Correct.
So what was the big difference between, like, say, something like Iron Man and this film?
Likeable characters. A general story that wasn't like absolute garbage.
Spencer, pull no punches, please. Go ahead. Keep.
Well, I just mean like Iron Man has like, you know, a really like nice start where it's like, you know, you got this playboy billionaire. He's like, I make weapons. Fwah! And like a whole bunch of weapons go off. But then he gets kidnapped. And then like he, you know, has like this reckoning with that. And he like makes iron suits now. And then he takes on like someone who's in his own company. Like it's like a whole like thing. Here, it's domestic issues, the movie, for the most part. Yeah. Like between
domestic Eddie- issues, the that should have domestic been the title. Issues,
just the movie
Venom, domestic issues, the movie.
But like, it's mostly just like most of the movie is just an internal conflict between Eddie and Venom that you're just watching while they're in their apartment, and like the other bits of it are just Cletus Cassidy, who is too confusing for me to like really follow as a villain for this movie.
Yeah.
Because like when it comes about at the end of the movie, the only reason he wanted Eddie around is because he wanted a friend. I'm like, what the heck are you talking about? You kill people and you wanted a friend and you wanted to pick this loser writer who's on the outs? What? I just kind of shut down at that point because it was so crazy to me. But I guess, you know, he's a crazy person, but still, like, it still seemed off.
What about you, Jack?
You know, I found myself looking at Woody Harrelson and thinking to myself, I don't know, I started thinking about Cheers. And I started thinking about Punky Brewster and wow. Charles in Charge. I started thinking about a bunch of...
He's in Charles in Charge?
No, he wasn't.
Okay.
But thank God.
It's from the same era.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So mm-hmm. I started thinking about all these TV shows. So like basically my mind wandered, and maybe that's because I was buzzed. But I was thinking to myself, like, I was excited when I saw Woody Harrelson because mm-hmm. I forgot. Yeah. That he was going to be in it.
Yeah.
And then when I saw him in it, I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, he's still alive. And no, absolutely. And
he's still alive. That's right.
And he's doing something. And then I didn't get a lot from it. I kind of just felt like this disappointed on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, while I was watching the entire movie, I just thought to myself, why didn't I sneak in two beers? This is this is where I left the movie. Was like, why didn't I bring a second, another one, and another one? So yeah, it wasn't the worst, but it wasn't the best.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Amy?
Okay, so the story is supposed to be taking off a couple of different storylines from the comic books, and it's continuing from the first one into the second one. That's why they keep making the lethal protector joke, which is this entire actual Venom run in the comic books. Hysterically enough, I actually have a number one foil copy of this particular arc. God help me, I don't know why.
Sounds awesome.
I mean, it's shiny. It is shiny.
How shiny?
Oh, so shiny. So shiny. So I understood kind of what they were trying to do, but the problem is that this storyline, instead of doing what they do with Iron Man, which is cut and dry, let us tell you the origin story, they're trying to introduce you to more aspects of the, at this point, it's no longer even the Spider-Verse, it's the Venom. It's supposed to be the Venom-verse. Mm. And the thing is, the Lethal Protector arc actually has five different symbiotes that are showing up. And not just surprise Carnage. Because, of course, when you split off a symbiote, it makes baby symbiotes and they turn into other things. So this was just... This was... No.
No.
It was a no. Like...
It's a hard no.
I'm an optimist. I am an optimist. And this was just... this was a no. Like, no.
Hey, since you're our resident comic book person, I have a question.
I might have an answer.
Okay. So, during the movie, when Venom finally sees Carnage, he's like, oh, that's a red one. Nope. And like he's like, what's going on? Does that actually mean anything, or is that just a thing he said?
No.
So, well, it kind of doesn't. It kind of doesn't, because the thing is that there are different color symbiotes. But the problem is that him defining and going, oh, it's a red one. I can't, you know, nope. It doesn't happen. Like, you find out there's other symbiotes based on their names and his planet,
but there are no, so the intention behind him saying that has no implication on like a class, different class of symbiote. Okay. You know, that
just means different power sets. Just,
not even that.
Yeah,
it's
he could pick up more. Carnage could pick up more than Venom could technically, but it's tons. But
that's,
we're not
in
talking
the
about
comics. That's, we're not talking comics. About in this movie. This no. movie, you're looking at it through a lens of the director was trying to say something. Mm. The director didn't know what he was trying to say. That particular scene, and I've researched it, I've looked it up, there was no indication of it actually being something different. Okay. Like, so
they just wanted you to be curious. Like, oh, he's the bad guy and he's the big one and blah, and you're just like,
yeah, he was just exclaiming that it was like, oh, because it's red. That's pretty much it. Okay. But that does kind of bring up a different question for...
I mean, there's a purple one, a blue one, a green one, a red one.
But they're all hues of black.
Orange, yeah.
And mind you, you could... If this movie gave room for it, yeah, there could be more of like an opportunity to expand on the actual origins of like Venom and the symbiote family and the planet Clintar and all these different elements. You could go into all that.
It was Gore's planet. Clintars are their names. Isn't that the species name? That's a different one. Sorry. My brain. Whoop.
Anyway. So, mind you, that's a much larger question. That's a much larger conversation. And honestly, I don't think this movie, quite frankly, doesn't deserve that kind of a conversation in this element.
Yeah, this movie kind of doesn't really care.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Like, it would be like, what does red mean? Like, he would have, like, they could have just leaned into it slightly.
Yeah, like, if there was an actual, like, meaning behind it, they were going to expand upon it. Or if there was actual credence to him being red in the film, as opposed to just the way it is in the comic books.
It's a Red Hulk, Green Hulk scenario.
True, very true. Because in that scenario, it's merely based on the host of said gamma radiation, i.e. General Ross is just a much angrier person, so he's naturally the Red Hulk.
Makes sense.
As opposed to Bruce Banner, who's a mild-mannered scientist, green, blah, blah, blah. In terms of the story, we mentioned a couple
times...
Okay, yeah.
What story?
Apparently the lack of. How on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate this story's consistency?
Consistency?
Like consistently from what? Consistently bad? Consistently confusing? Consistently angering, lacking more substances to ensure.
Consistently trash.
I will go with consistently confusing, just because of a lot of. Damn it! I cannot say what is his
Cletus
name.
Cletus Cassidy.
Cletus Cassidy. I am cycling through Cassius Clay and now Butch Cassidy.
Cactus Jack.
Because
oh, I like Cactus Jack.
Cactus Jack. We miss Cactus Jack.
It is.
I
so want to
go
hard.
Meet him. I'm just going
to remember. You should
guys do that for me. Sorry.
Everybody's making it difficult for Seth.
Stay focused, bro. Stay focused.
Yeah, I just, like, his whole arc in this movie, I don't fully understand.
No, and that's a great point because of the fact that there is no arc. Like, it's, do you
he
know?
He doesn't have an arc.
Like, this is how much they were banking on the star power of Woody Harrelson. They actually, in the beginning of the film, they do a back into 1992, I believe, at St. Francis or St. Estes.
Yeah, St. Estes.
Which is the actual comic book origin place for Cletus Cassidy. But they go back to 1992 at that time, and they show Cletus and Shriek kind of sharing a moment. This is how much they were banking on that. Woody Harrelson's voice is actually
is
used
voice.
Yeah, see,
for that scene.
I heard that and I was like, damn,
that is yeah, I was like, why is Woody Harrelson's voice coming out of that young teenage man child that's screaming on the windows? That was scary.
Yeah, it was. As soon as I read that, I'm like, that makes so much sense. They are seriously banking on Woody Harrelson putting butts in seats for this film. And no offense, but the wig he wore in this one was just as bad as the wig he wore in
the
first
one. It was a touch better, but it was really hard.
Like that little...
Only in color.
Only in color.
Yes.
You're just like, black and white, it's good.
But that whole little swoop down in the second half of the film in his hair was like, why?
You mean when
because
he was just
crazy.
Touching it? He just touched it and it kept going down and down and down and down. Like he licked his hand, just... His hair went down.
Like, he belongs in, like, a 1950s barbershop or something.
Maybe he was aiming for Spider-Man 3.
Well, he's about,
maybe we should
like,
have had Matthew McConaughey.
Oh.
That would have took it to another level.
Been, whoa.
That could have been interesting.
Oh,
depending
man.
On how that was acted.
Then that would have been Interstellar. If we would have had Matthew McConaughey, that shit would have been Interstellar.
That would be super interesting. That would be... If you could cast anybody in the role other than Woody Harrelson for Cletus Cassidy.
Well, now it's Matthew McConaughey for me.
That's all I want. If I don't get it next time, I'm not going to the $5 movie night. Straight up.
Remy Malek.
Oh,
ooh, that
Remy
would
Malek
be interesting.
Would be
that
one.
Would be just enough to
the guy who played Freddie Mercury in the Freddie Mercury biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody.
He's Macaulay Culkin. Let's do Macaulay Culkin while we're
the way
at
he
it.
Looks nowadays.
Elijah Wood would be too funny.
Elijah Wood would be scary.
Yes.
Scary
Elijah
funny.
Wood, ever
That'd
since
so
like
good.
Sin City.
We want
like,
scary.
We want to kind of understand.
There's,
I think
there's
that's
scary
the biggest problem.
And then there's
want, like frightening. Someone who's an actual threat. Because like this.
And Eddie, not Eddie. Woody Harrelson is not a threat.
Well, you're like, I have a stick.
For me, Woody he's like Harrelson. So confusing. Like right. Just keep your space, you'll be fine. That's the end of it. Like, but like if you get like someone in there who's like is actually menacing, like you know,
you
like,
mean he wasn't menacing while he's sitting there eating his barbecue chicken on his little plate with the apple and that pink cup on his death row? And he's like, my last meal.
I was like, why now? Why in the middle?
You know, it'd be an interesting choice. Christoph Waltz.
Oh, gosh. That's the type of menace. He could bring it. That's what I'm talking about.
That would be interesting. Like Christoph Waltz as Cletus Cassidy with the wig and everything. And just,
he'd look ridiculous, but like I feel like he could do the menacing part, like just where it needs to be,
easily. Like if you really wanted to try, Christoph Waltz naturally could do. What about Christopher Walken?
No, it would be so hilarious, but no.
As a joke movie, I would be heck into this.
That would be a great one.
It would be fantastic.
As completely not taking itself seriously, yes, because that's asking Steve Buscemi to come in and do it just for giggles.
Steve Buscemi's already played a serial killer in Con Air. So he was...
You just want him to go on a red wig?
Con Air.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was like the psycho who ends up getting away.
And then we find him later and he ended up being in this universe. It makes sense.
Steve Buscemi?
Yeah. I like him.
Just shift everyone around now.
Right?
We're like Dreamcast and go.
What were your guys' biggest either highlights or biggest issues? Because I know we've talked about a bunch of like baseline issues, but was there something so outlandish that just really took the cake for you guys? Or even something that was like the shining diamond in this mound of poo that really, you know, allowed you to see something?
Do you have something, Jack?
No, not yet.
You were like ruminating. It was between you and Spencer's like, I got this. Let me go.
I'm a number four. I'm processing. I'm processing what this movie still means.
So we'll tell you when to go.
Tell me when to go.
Did you have something, Mames?
I mean, Spencer's like, let me.
No, I'm still.
Okay, I'll go first. Okay. Since you guys are going through so many different things.
I like going through things.
Here's the thing. I had an issue. My biggest issue out of this entire movie was my consideration of it was finalized after watching the pitch meeting on Screen Rant for this particular film. And the fact that their whole plan, their whole mastermind plan was surrounded around the fact that they were going to get A, married, and then B, they were going to kill the people that were responsible for where they're at now.
Vaguely.
You had Shriek who wanted to get the cop who shot her in the eye.
Which doesn't even make any sense. Like, yes, she did shoot her in the eye, but that's not the reason she's in jail, and that's not the reason she's at Ravencroft.
No.
She's at Ravencroft because she's a mutant and she can hurt people.
Yeah.
And then you had Cletus Cassidy who wanted Eddie Brock because even though he promised him the scoop of the story of his life, he got upset because Eddie found out where he hid the bodies and sent him to death row, even because though he's still alive.
He wrote it on a wall like an Venom, idiot.
And Venom goes, I see things.
Yeah, Venom. Here's my next movie with Venom, like, ignoring the end credit scene. My next movie with Venom, he becomes his own freelance journalist, and then him and Eddie get into like a fight about who's a better journalist.
Is he like Raphael in Ninja Turtles and he has a hat and a trench coat and he just goes around? That's the first thing that came to mind.
He just takes over other people's bodies. His trench
coat. But that whole
Flash Thompson, here I come.
The whole basis for their big mastermind plan is hinged on three people.
Yeah.
The priest.
And then even then, they're not even able to make that work. Like, there's no fun parts in that one for me. Like, throughout the rest of the film, there's like little fun parts where Eddie and Venom go back and forth. Like, if I was to look at a highlight of the film for me, like the most I chuckled at the film was during that scene when Venom's making breakfast for Eddie. And Eddie's just literally like standing there just pouring orange juice. And tendrils are going all over the place, burning things, catching things on fire. There's a tendril that goes out the door to get the mail from downstairs, all while Venom is singing this 1950s song that's on the radio. And it's like...
It's Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong.
Yeah. And it's like, that's...
Let's call the whole thing off.
That's funny. Like, that was silly. But this is just dumb. Like, that whole mastermind plan of like... We're gonna off them, and then we're gonna get married. Like, okay, that's a redneck wedding if I've ever heard one.
Well, really, honestly, I was confused when they like had to like kidnap a priest because I was like, just say you're married, go to the church, put rings on each other, you're done. Like,
or drive to Vegas and go through the drive through and get it done.
Why on earth would two fugitives want to go through the legal system? Like, honestly,
the
why?
Symbolism.
They've been in institutions.
Both of them.
For the whole part of their life.
They were trying to redeem themselves. That's all they were trying to redeem themselves.
Yes.
He ate the priest. He's not.
He ate that priest.
There you go. It turned into Sweeney Todd real quick.
What about you guys? Your guys' biggest highlights or biggest issues? Did it give you enough time to think?
No, because you took the best one. yeah, honestly, like, once you're at that point in the movie where we're dealing with the Red Wedding, it's just, you're like, all right, let's wrap it up here.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, when you're in the movie, it's like, okay, I got it. you're done here. Let's go home. Like, it's not that great to be in that kind of position. And so, like, I was just kind of like, okay, when is this movie out of steam, really? Mm. It was kind of like, are they actually going to kill this Anne lady? Oh, no. All right. I would have been impressed if they would have done something shocking like that. But then I also wouldn't have, because I feel like it was also kind of leaning too much into, like, Spider-Man. Like, where they killed Gwen Stacy, too.
Well, she's supposed to be Lady Venom, so.
Mm.
Dum, dum, dum.
What about you, Ames?
So, highlights. I do appreciate a sweet, sweet jam on the radio. That moment of being the person trying to cheer up your best friend after a breakup. I've been there, except with no tendrils. And it does not work either way you try to help people. But it's always a great time. Besides the really bad story, Dr. Dan was there just for comedic, like, I don't know what's going on, but look, I'm a hero now, huh? That was pretty rough. And I just didn't like this, okay? Like,
it's so the movie as a whole, essentially, is your choice.
Yeah, that's my issue.
It's also interesting that Venom was like, why was he, Dr. Dan, even here? He wasn't even that helpful. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're right. Why was Dr. Dan here?
I did like, random highlight, which reminded me.
Dr. Dan.
Not Dr. Dan. Not Dr. Dan. Sorry, Dr. Dan. In the story, when Venom finally does decide to leave, and they have that grand breakup sequence where he's like, get out of my house, get out of my house. It's like, it's my apartment. That was really ridiculous. But when he finally actually starts body jumping, so Venom's going through and it's literally, he's got a couple of hours in the house before he kills him. We've downplayed that so much, but that is actually, like, in the story itself or the comics, the symbiotes have to be able to bond to their human host to survive. So him jumping from person to person to person for however long he was, he's just, like, leaving dead bodies everywhere. It's, like, totally copacetic. Like, that was weirdly, like, yay for comic book version. And then, like, wait, this is not okay, man. You're just, like, murdering people in San Francisco and going on your sweet journey.
Wait. Those people died.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every single person woman,
I did not get
so
that.
So the woman.
I thought they just passed out.
No, they die. So the man, so when he comes into Mrs. Chen, also there was my favorite.
Did he kill Mrs. Chen?
No.
Okay.
He wasn't in Mrs. Chen long enough.
What's the time limit?
It's literally like when he's running out. So when you saw him come into the store for Mrs. Chen, and he's laying there, and he's like, need food. He's killing, that guy's literally on his last leg. It's like a couple of hours. Mm. However long he was with Mrs. Chen, it was short enough that he got out of Mrs. Chen into Anne and then back into Eddie in a quick enough time span. And Anne had already been able to host the symbiote for more than a couple of hours.
Well, she's already proven that her body is capable of bonding with Venom, because they do that in the first film.
Right.
Where she's Lady,
like,
Venom.
Like, seriously, coincidentally, you know, she just happens to be capable of bonding with Venom. Air quotes. So in this case, her getting hold of Venom wasn't a big deal, but Mrs. Chen could have died, in other words.
And then Mrs. Chen straight up got rid of that dude's body, like, ain't nothing.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure she called, like, body disposal or whatever, and just...
She's like,
just assume Venom ate him as Mrs. Chen.
I mean, that is a good possibility.
That's a possibility. That's actually
but the other thing, so the thing that I was, like, really excited about was they had my favorite candy bar, like, when she was checking the inventory.
Oh, my God.
I like a Mars bar. Okay. Like a British Mars bar. So the black wrapper with the red writing.
The real Mars bar.
Yeah. Exactly.
The real one.
From the UK. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So
I just want to point out that it's usually a bad sign when you're like, oh, hey, I like this food that's in the store.
My favorite candy. Yeah.
Yeah, but
as opposed to paying attention to what's happening in the scene.
Yes.
I mean, Mrs. Chen is sitting there going, oh, Venom. And she picks them up like babies. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, it was very odd.
Jack, did you have any issues with highlights?
I think Venom should have just devoured Dr. Dan's head.
Hey,
I think Dr. Dan should have just been gone from the get-go, because he had no purpose in this movie. And you know, and then we have the Red Wedding, and here I am. I feel like this entire movie, I sat in this $5 theater and thought to myself, I'm thinking about other things. I'm thinking about Cheers. I'm thinking about Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the Red Wedding of Game of Thrones. So as soon as that, as soon as I heard that, it triggered me, and I was like, this is going to be freaking great. And it wasn't great. It fell short, and I was disappointed, and I was wishing I had a third beer. so, you know, yeah, it was just one of those moments where I just was like, this movie is not doing it for me, and I'm so glad I didn't pay
full price.
Yeah, like my roommate, he, you know, he wanted to go to the 3D HD.
No.
He was trying to pay $19 for this movie.
No.
A person?
Yes. He was trying to go to the other theater on Friday night for $19, and I said, I'll go for $5, and I made the right choice.
Yes, yeah.
I do want to add, now that you've mentioned the Red Wedding bit, I remember when they was like, it's going to be Red Wedding. I was like, but who could you possibly kill that would actually have an impact?
Right, who matters?
Yeah, and there's only like four people at this point. Well, five, you count Mrs. Chen.
And Spider-Man.
But like...
And the chickens.
Yeah, Sonny and Cher.
Sonny and Cher. I mean, that would have just been like heartbreaking.
Venom would have like legitimately
Or the tire,
screamed.
Snooki.
Oh,
Snooki.
But like,
I don't want to know why it's named that, by the way. Just saying.
Snooki.
But like, the thing is like, what are the stakes here? You're going to call it something like that, because like, even I've seen like the Game of Thrones Red Wedding, and I was like, bloody. And like, it just kind of sets you up for failure, because it doesn't even, like, no one's at stake.
No one.
Yeah.
The priest.
Oh, I'm so mad about that.
And speaking of being mad about things, I think one of the biggest things that's kind of splitting a lot of folks into like different sides or whatever is the revelation that happens in the end credit scene.
Mm-hmm.
Or mid-credit scene, because I don't think it's an end credit scene. It's a mid-credit.
Yeah.
The mid-credit scene, and mind you, we've already said spoilers, so if you've been with us this far, too bad. Because we're going to talk about this.
You've been with us this far. Thank you.
Aww.
My gosh.
Good point.
So in the end credit scene, you get Eddie and Venom have gone on the lam. They're running away from the law, or running away, not trying to get caught. They're on some beach somewhere in like an island or some kind of coastal area. And Venom gets a chance to put his feet in the sand like he'd wanted to in the first place. And it transitions over to them sitting in this kind of janky motel room with the TV on, and Venom mentions that, you know, he's a part of a hive mind of knowledge, that he's got billions of light years of information, and that he was going to share just a small fraction of it with Eddie. And in that moment, which where it looks like he's sharing that information, it looks like there's like this transdimensional shift, and the whole room changes into this nice little coastal motel or hotel where you can see the beach out the window, and Eddie and Venom are both looking at the TV, and at that moment you're seeing the report that is at the end of Spider-Man Far From Home, where J. Jonah Jameson is talking about how that Spider-Man is, you know,
public
enemy number one. Yeah.
Public enemy number one.
And, you know, that, you know, this kid has been revealed as Spider-Man, Peter Parker, blah, blah, blah. And Venom is saying, you know, this is interesting. This is whatever, you know. And then it ends, ultimately insinuating that now Venom is currently in the main MCU 616 Earth timeline. Now, here are my thoughts. I'm not a fan of this end credit scene.
Hmm.
And here's why. Mind you, yes, I love the idea that we're going to get a Venom in the current MCU timeline. I just don't know if this particular Venom, or even Venom's story, is polished enough to fit in this MCU timeline.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great gesture. Mm-hmm. Mind you, I'm anxious to see the idea of like Eddie Brock / Tom Hardy, you know, be buddies with Peter Parker, helping them do, you know, with when Spider-Man moves to the San Francisco area, does the whole Lethal Avengers thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be really cool. But there's still so much to build here. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea. I just don't know how well it's going to fan out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's really interesting because like at first I was like, yes. But then I was like, wait a minute. Like, this version of Venom and Brock, like, even if they were to face Peter Parker, like, they come across as too goofy to me to really be the heavy antagonistic that, like,
yeah,
I would expect for a fight. Because, like, honestly, I feel like even if Peter caught, like, Venom trying to eat someone, you'd be like, hey, you can't do that. I feel like Eddie would be like, hey, yeah, sorry, I thought this was, like, a super bad guy and that I could just eat him and blah, 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 blah. Like, I feel like Eddie would be there and would kind of just defuse it, even if Venom got kind of pissed off in the situation. So, like, it just feels like there's, like, an imbalance.
Yeah.
But I also kind of, like, Marvel is recently shown that they're pretty good at balancing things. Hmm. So yeah. I'm like, this has my, like, okay, I'm willing to, like, look at what you're doing next with this character, because I feel like you probably know have a good idea.
Yeah, mind you, if there's creative heads who are going to be behind this transition, like, okay, we're moving Venom into the MCU, and now I don't know, Jon Favreau is going to take over the next, you know, Venom or the next Venom movie in the MCU, or Taika Waititi is going to
gosh, Taika, you know,
that'd be cool,
like, on board. Don't even care.
Venom meets Korg. Hi, I'm Korg. Rock monster. It's just one of those elements where I just don't know what the intention is moving forward. I don't know. What did you think, Jack, of the end credit scene?
Well, my roommate kind of spoiled it. So he was like, there's a jerk.
So he tried to charge you extra money and he spoiled the movie?
Yeah, yeah.
Dang,
he was,
man,
like, oh, there was this scene. So I knew something was coming. And I think I just, like, expected something different.
Yeah.
I expected something more. Yeah, I wasn't that, like, thrilled. I was like, oh, that's cool. There's a connection here, and what is this gonna, like,
yeah.
I was left thinking, like, you know, okay, what's gonna come out of this? But I wasn't like, wow, that was, like, amazing. You know? I can't wait. I just went to my car. And that was... And
he's like, I patted my pockets, couldn't find that fourth beer, and went home.
No, I didn't find the second, third, or fourth beer. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel like it could have been, you know what, I guess the best way to say it is that I felt like it was anticlimactic. It was just kind of like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, you know, there's Parker.
Yeah.
And now what?
Exactly, exactly. I think that was a really big sentiment I got as well. Like, okay. First off, I get what you're trying to do. Obviously, it's all over Reddit. Everybody's, ever since the first screenings of this movie debuted in the UK, when they first started doing press rounds, people had been hinting, like, oh my gosh, I live for the end credit scene, or blah, blah, blah. And, ooh, I'm at a burp. And you had all these people hinting at, like, this massive reveal, this big game-changing element in this end credit scene that you just had to, like, be there for. You had to see. You had to experience. And all that, and people speculating, you knew when people started saying, like, game, like, keywords like game-changing, or, you know, mind-blowing, or, oh, you know, genre-bending, or whatever it may be, like, all these unique, like, trigger words, you know they're talking about something bigger than the brand itself.
Yeah, than what it was, though. Because my mind wasn't blown. I was just like...
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, oh, okay. And the game wasn't changed.
Not at all.
You know? I was like, okay.
In fact, it was Venom joining the game. And it's like, oh. Honestly, I guess he's on our dodgeball team. Okay.
Before I saw this, I was like, I wonder if they're going to send him into the Spider-Verse. Like the animated one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that, because that might be mildly interesting. Him having a face off against Miles Morales.
That would have been interesting.
That would have been good.
And we still have yet to get that movie, which is going to be debuting next year. So
cool. I'm so excited.
But what did you think, Amy, in terms of that end credits? I know you've had a pretty, like, solid stance on this film through and through, but in terms of that mid-credit scene?
So it raises more questions than gives answers to. It makes questions of the timeline, makes questions of Nexus possibilities or symbiote powers as a whole. It also brings up the question of, is Venom the sixth member for the Sinister Six in that timeline for No Way Home? I am on that same boat that I really hope it's not. Because the Lethal Protector arc does, as you've already stated, has Eddie Brock, Venom making nice with Spider-Man, where they're like chemo buddy-o pals, which it would be completely kind of off mark. But then also we have wherever the heck they are, he's suddenly about to make his way to New York. Kudos for coming into the MCU, Tom Hardy. Congratulations. But other than that, it just... there's so many questions and there's not enough answers. But this is not... Everybody gave clickbait words when they were talking about this end credits
scene. Yeah, oh yeah.
It was clickbait up the yin-yang.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the press who had seen it would go on Twitter and say, you know, I can't really say anything about the movie, but... man, that end credit scene, or oh, you know, that end credit scene is going to change your world, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay,
it's not changing my world, it's asking me questions. Is this going to be Secret Wars? Is this going to be Battle World? What are we talking about? How are we, like, it raises more questions for me as a comic book reader because of everything that kind of comes from it and everything that is happening across the MCU. And while it's a take for Disney and the Marvel family, the family of Marvel that they've collected currently for the House Mouse. It's like, are we continually just trying to suck in the last little bit of holdouts from Sony so that we have them in our pocket?
Yes.
Because it is, yeah, because there's really, at this point, you can't tell a Spider-Man story without the big three or four. And Venom is one of them. They've already got Doc Ock in the slot. They've already got Green Goblin. They need Venom. And there might be fourth. I usually only think about the three.
Well, and you're also missing... I mean, the more iconic...
Mephisto. There you go. That's the one I was missing.
You're talking about Mysterio.
No, Mephisto. Everybody, yeah, Mysterio. But then we're going to start thinking about, you know, Old Man Logan and everything else. And it's going to get weird.
It's just going to be Mephisto. Wanda.
Why would you say Mephisto?
It's going to be WandaVision all over again.
It's going to be WandaVision. Like, because the devil's in the details.
That
Eddie.
Was that one limited series that devil's nobody. No,
House of M. He lives in there somewhere. He's just a devil.
Anyway, okay, Eric Voss. So it seems like right now it's still up for grabs as to how it's going to pan out. No one really knows what the implications are. No one even knows like what triggered the dimensional shift. I mean, there's a number of different things.
It did
but
seem very highly localized.
Like, yeah.
You specifically and nothing else.
That we know of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, there's a million things going on right now in the MCU that are just, oh, it could be this. Oh, it could be that. Oh, it could be these things. It could be those things. Like, it could be anything from Scarlet Witch to Loki to, you know, to everything. Like, to Doctor Strange. Everything seems to be a part of that kind of bubble, if you will, of the catalyst for this shift. So who knows? I don't know. But it does kind of drop the question, talking about this story and talking about the elements of this story drawn up by Sony. And I really want to ask the table, is it possible to actually have a successful superhero film outside of Marvel Disney?
And there's only one thing, and I can say yes, but there's only been one that I can put a pin in. It's Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Agree.
Because
that was still a part of the Marvel Disney Studios.
That's
still
Marvel. Not Disney. It's more of a Sony film.
It's a Sony film. It's not Disney.
Yeah.
And so that was the thing that, yes, Disney owns the rights, but they weren't the ones that actually worked on that. And it's not even put out as a Disney property. Like, we'll have to get into the weeds and like pull it apart to prove you right, or to prove us wrong, I guess. But that's the only thing that I can actively think of that was successful and did not have the mouse stamp specifically
but so,
on it.
So here's the thing. Consistency is king. That's kind of the I guess, end-all be-all for what marks, you know, success in my book. Yes, you can have one great film and that's all right, but it doesn't make it a success. It doesn't make that studio a success. That's like saying all them one-hit wonders are still, you know, bringing in the bills like all day long, because of that one song and everything else they did subsequently after that. That's not how one-hit wonders work. They only make the one hit, and then that's it. So, yeah, I agree. Like, Into the Spider-Verse is a great film. That's one. Like, does Sony have anything else that we can add to that? And in that same mindset, what about Warner Brothers, DC? What about Paramount? What about, you know, all the other studios out there who are making attempts? Even, I mean, I would even go as far as to say, I don't know. I think I know the brand is Image, but I don't know the studio who did it. Invincible.
That's Amazon.
Well, yeah, Amazon created Amazon Studios. Actually, you're right. Amazon Studios did Invincible, which is a great comic book adaptation by Robert Kirkman, the guy who did the Walking Dead comic book series.
Well, are we talking specifically movies? Are we talking just about in superhero genre as a whole?
Well, and that's where I'm getting to. Like, is there anybody at least out there who is doing that successfully, consistently?
Netflix didn't do too terrible with Umbrella
Academy.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I really do.
And
like
they're currently at two. So if you're talking about consistency, well,
and now that I think about it too, talking about Amazon, you got The Boys,
mm-hmm, which is up for it's going into its third
season.
And then on the technicality, the Kingsman movies are actually supposed to be superheroes or based on comic books, but that's a stretch, and that's Mark Millar.
That's a really heavy stretch there, because success is a very loose word for that second film. There's a third one coming out.
Yeah,
that second film though
was
hot
garbage.
And it's
got your girlfriend in it.
That second film was hot garbage, because yeah, people struggled with that second one. we did the review of it on here for that second one, and I think Chad almost like flipped his cookies because he was like, that was straight up porn. That was just straight up porn. Oh my god!
Like, what?
Seen the second one?
Because so. in the second one,
there's Elton John in the second
so
one.
So in the second film,
Elton John,
yes, in full regalia.
So in the second film, he has to hide a tracker on this girl that he sees at a festival.
Oh, that's right.
The only way he can insert the tracker into this woman.
It's attached to something else that needs to be inserted into something
else. I'll let you, your imagination.
That's straight porn. That is. Chad, I agree with you, Chad.
So that movie wasn't as successful as the first one, but I don't know. Well, I guess we'll just have to see how the third one pans out. But so do you think it's possible in terms of film that someone else can create a success? Because I know we're still struggling to see that consistently with DC.
Animated film has been consistently in WB's wheelhouse for DC, which is the only time that I've seen consistently successful, but they're still very underground. They don't have the widespread success that Disney Marvel movies
and
do.
Much like
even
with,
though they're well made, they're usually really close to book, they're wonderfully acted. They are like, if you want to go in there, you go in there. But if we're talking like Schneider Cut or any of that shenanigans, I mean,
I don't
Christopher Reeve's Superman, not number four.
So here's
I find that wildly successful.
I do find that.
Do you remember the production studio for that one?
Oh, Global. Yeah. What the heck is their name? I don't remember.
I guess with certain properties, I guess it just varies. So,
Batnips.
So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about Jack, what we do here is we actually pass or fail the film based on how well the story translates on screen. And then we rate it out of 5 monocles.
Okay.
So I'll let Spencer go first. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Golan Globus Productions is who did Superman.
That was the most non-sober thing you've said on this podcast all day.
What are you talking about? It's hard to say. Golan? What? What even is that?
Gollum?
No.
Gollum.
Was it an M or an N at the end?
Say it
again,
Spencer.
Golan.
Golan.
Yeah. G-O-L-A-N.
Golan, yeah.
Spencer, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Pass or fail is really hard for this movie. I mean, no, it's not. It fails. Like, because when you come down, like, if someone's like, what's the story to this movie? Two criminals get married? like that happens.
Maybe,
but, like, it's like
did
hard
they get
to like.
Married? I don't know. I don't remember.
Did that oh no, they happen? Didn't actually.
They put a ring on it, but nobody. She never gets to say I do.
Well, he liked it, so he tried.
He called her his wife.
Yeah, it's just I find it like kind of just a confusing mess, and honestly, I don't think it's terribly much better than the first one. I kind of feel like it's in line with what they've done previously. So, you know, kind of disappointed that they didn't do more with it. Or, you know, since they had like 3 years, improve upon whatever formula they had. So, this one gets a 2 from me. You know, there were some funny scenes with like Venom and Eddie. But like...
Vinny?
Vinny.
Oh, that's your nickname for Venom now? You're on a personal level Vinny with them, Vinny?
I mean, it's Vinny basically
I mean,
it's basically a rom-com.
If they're giving like a lot of those couples like that pet name like Jennifer and...
Bennifer?
Bennifer. And,
so we got Vinny and Eddie.
There you go. Vinny.
Terrible.
So 2 out of 5. Yeah, all right, what about you, Amy? Terrible. Does it from Pastor Villain have any monocles?
Sorry. So this... First time I think actually I'm failing something. This does not pass for
Welcome
me.
To the fail club.
Yes. Much like the beloved song that is made fun of and used in the movie, let's just call the whole thing off. You say potato and I say potato. We don't play the potato jam. It is all over the place when it comes to storyline. If you kind of have maybe more than one beer, you might be able to go through it.
Maybe.
And find some additional funds, but you're going to probably be loudly proclaiming at the screen, what? Sorry to make you peek.
Fun.
And yeah, I'm going to give this sucker, out of the goodness of my heart, it's a 2.5, but still, that is just, that 0.5 is extra, like, if you get inebriated, it might be fun.
What about you, Jack?
2.5.
It's okay if you like it.
Does it pass or fail, and how many monocles?
You know, is there a 10th episode of Squid Game?
Nope.
Because I thought to myself, I can't wait to go home and watch another episode of Squid Game, and then I realized I finished it.
Season 2.
Well, hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Led me to believe that this was a 2.25. Mm-hmm. I'm going to drop it a quarter lower than Amy. 2.25, not super duper impressed. I should have picked up a 4-pack from a local brewery and just, you know, maybe I would have enjoyed it more.
Mm.
It wasn't the worst, but it wasn't the best. Yeah.
There you go.
Cha-cha-cha.
Not Eddie Brock Eddie?
No. The film fails for me. The story is not consistent enough for me to actually see any value in it. I don't like the inclusion of these characters just for the thrill of it without any actual credence to them or even purpose. Michelle Williams is a wash, even though she's a great actress. Naomi Harris is a great actress, and she's horrible as Shriek. Woody Harrelson should just go back to True Detective. There's not many places, and send us Matthew McConaughey. There's not many high points to this film, and the story is one of the lowest parts of it. So the film fails for that, and I'm going to have to give this film a 2.25 as well. In terms of rating, because of the fact that this film doesn't really do much in terms of outside of the whole toxic relationship mindset kind of thing. So it really does fit within that realm of parables. Like, let's just keep Venom as like a biblical character now, teaching people about schizophrenia and toxic relationships. Because outside of that, there's not much else that really brings value to these films. And it's sad to say, because I'm actually a slight fan of Venom, mainly because of the cartoon series. But outside of that, there really wasn't much else. And especially with his run recently and a lot of his comics that he's been doing and him becoming like this cosmic being, and now he's essentially the most powerful being in the universe in the comic books.
Oh, you mean he finally gets to be an alien in space?
Yeah, all that above.
Hmm.
I liked those elements of Venom, and especially where they're taking him now in the comics. I don't like where they're taking him here in the film. It really is leaving a lot to desire for fans of the comics and the movie. So, yeah, that's where I gotta leave it. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com, where we got over 280 episodes for your listening pleasure. Check us out. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can drop us a line over on our socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. You can let us know anything you'd like to say, especially ideas and thoughts about previous episodes. You can also hear us over on any place where you're streaming your podcast, at iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Pandora, everywhere you listen to podcasts, we are there. I want to give a special thanks to not only Amy for being on the show and helping us with this conversation, but I also want to introduce a brand new show that Jack is going to be throwing out there called Jack of All Flights Podcast. It's a show he's going to be debuting hopefully by December of this year, and we're going to be dropping episodes. I'm helping him produce some of those. But Jack, you want to tell people a little bit about what it's about?
Yeah, man. The Jack of All Flights. We're going to just be talking about all things... All things. We're going to be talking about traveling, relationships, sex, dating, current, you know, current affairs going on in the world. Just basically kind of a little bit of everything, but really focused on, you know, traveling and experiences of what's going on in the world today and, you know, what it's like to be traveling and also, you know, dating, relationships.
Yeah.
So all that.
There you go. So when it drops, we'll be announcing it here on the podcast, and you'll be able to find it at all places where you're streaming podcasts as well. So check it out, the Jack of All Flights Podcast. We'll drop a link when we get the information and it goes live for you here on the podcast. But again, I'd like to thank my co-hosts. I thank Spencer, Amy, Jack. Thank you guys for being a part of this. Here's the thing. If you guys don't kind of believe what we're saying about the film, you guys have the opportunity. Check it out. Let us know your thoughts. Go see the film because
see it on a cheap day though.
Cheap. Yeah,
see it on a $5 day.
You'll be happier then.
You'll be very happier then. So
you'll be less disappointed then.
So that about wraps up another awesome episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
I'm the Jack of All Flights.
Class dismissed.